Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More, with Francisco Fribronio Pena. Active citizens build resilient cities.
The historical perspective and evolution of water use and development can be summarized in the words of the Danish philosopher Søren Kierkegaard: life must be lived forward, but understood backward. Starting with early civilizations, the need to provide and satisfy basic human needs encompassed the construction of water management infrastructure, such as wells, canals, and in particular aqueducts, the greatest invention for water transportation from one place to another. Aqueducts have been around the world for thousands of years, supplying sufficient water for larger cities and irrigation purposes, created by the Persians, underground water tunnels, and Romans, surface aqueducts. That said, it's undeniable that sustainable innovations in water technology for resource management, sanitation systems, navigation, hydropower, and even laws are needed to maximize efficiency in a more sustainable way to tackle water stress and scarcity. What can we learn from the history of hydraulic civilizations and human geography? Are we replicating the same mistakes over again? Are urban planners using the rich in content evidence from books and historians to learn from them and move forward? Welcome to a special edition of Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More podcast. This is your host, Francisco Peña. Thank you for being with us today. Here we have a good friend from Colorado, Professor Tom Check, director of the One World, One Water Center for Urban Water Education and Stewardship at Metropolitan State University of Denver, and visiting professor at the Water Resources Research and Documentation Center. Welcome back, Tom.
Greetings, Francisco, and thank you, Radiofonica, for having me here today.
Yeah, it's really great to have you here. This is your third time in Italy, right?
It is. I'm becoming a regular here in Perugia, and I'm enjoying it greatly.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you'll be back soon.
We hope so.
So, tell us more. What have you been working on for the past 3 months?
It's been a fascinating 3 months. Arrived here the 1st of October and began teaching a water resources class related to urban water planning, and that's been a lot of fun. I have about 65 students in the class, and then also worked on a study abroad class from MSU Denver that came here last month, that spent about a week in Perugia learning about water in Italy, and then also working on a book proposal with Dr. Fernando Nardi with regarding citizen science and open data, big data. So it's been a very exciting 3 months.
Tom is the author of the worldwide famous book for undergraduate and graduate level students, Principles of Water Resources History, Development, Management, and Policy, published by Wiley and Sons.
I got an idea!
I would like to know, what was your main motivation behind writing the book?
It was interesting. I'd always thought about writing a book, and when I was teaching a similar course like this in Colorado, I learned quickly there was no existing water textbook for beginning students wanting to learn more about water in Colorado and around the world. So I inquired with some publishers and was fortunate enough to write this book.
Was it difficult to translate complex ideas into simple scientific terms?
It is. It's water resources can be full of complex terms and terminology and concepts. And one of the challenges of writing a book like this is to make it simple and yet comprehensive. And so that was a challenge that was quite fun and engaging, because you really have to understand the topic in order to make it more simple and straightforward.
Right. And which topics does the book address?
It's a wide range of topics. We range anywhere from ancient water history to the hydrologic cycle, to the environment, to water quality, to water law, water policy, water issues in the future, and so forth.
All kinds of topics. If I'm not mistaken, the first chapter talks about the historical perspective of water use and development. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, that was one of my favorite chapters to write. And we get into the issue of aqueducts and transporting water great distances by ancient civilizations. What's so interesting, in Colorado and the U.S., we hear of projects to move water in pipelines from water-rich areas to cities, like in California to Los Angeles. Well, people have been doing this around the world for many, many centuries in Italy and in Spain and many other places in Europe,
In your opinion, how have aqueducts changed the life of ordinary people?
Well, it's been phenomenal. Before the existence of aqueducts in Rome, for example, the source of water was the Tiber River or perhaps from wells, and those sources of water were limited during the dry parts of the year. By bringing water from springs and other mountainous areas from a further distance, it provided a more reliable water supply, which then allows the citizens to do other things besides searching for water and growing food. They can become artisans or politicians or engage in business. It opens up for a much richer civilization.
What is your opinion about aqueducts were generally restricted to the influence of the Roman civilization?
You know, the Romans were master engineers, and they created wonderful works of water. There's an aqueduct park near the Colosseum of Rome that is worth visiting. It totally changed the civilization, and yet it, in some ways, made them vulnerable to invaders down the road.
In fact, the remains of the Roman medieval aqueduct, or Arco di Via Appia, is located in the heart of Perugia, a few minutes away from the studio. It is 3 kilometers long and was constructed to bring water from Monte Paciano to the Fontana Maggiore between the cathedral and Palazzo dei Priori. Today is one of the most iconic gems in Perugia.
And that was the first water aqueduct I ever saw in person. It was so exciting to see it the first time I came to Perugia. And it's just one of many aqueducts around the world. There's the aqueducts in the park in Rome that I mentioned earlier, the Pont du Gard in Provence, France, the El Puente Aqueduct in Spain, and then a large aqueduct in Mexico City, places that we don't typically think of for aqueducts.
Let me ask you another thing. According to some historians, aqueducts were a deadly beauty. Is that correct?
That's correct. And that's a fascinating way to put it, because these aqueducts provided life to the cities, but yet when invaders showed up, such as in Rome, all it took was knocking down one small section of the aqueduct and you literally threw the city into chaos.
To learn more about water wars, take a look at episode 8, Water Diplomacy. Now it is time to go listen to my voice 120. We'll be back very soon with Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and more.
Hi, my name is Sara Carpinelli. I'm from Orvieto, a town in the center of Italy, and I'm a law graduate specializing in international law. I'm the coordinator of Umbria Regional Committee of Italian Youth Association for UNESCO. UNESCO Giovani, which means young people in English, was founded in 2015 and has grown a lot since then. Now we are more than 350 young people between 20 and 35 years old coming from all over Italy. Our activity consists in supporting the action of the agency and in promoting UNESCO's values through the organization of events and promotion of projects. Indeed, every year the association also works in collaboration with schools with the aim to increase awareness about different issues, such as cultural heritage, migration policies, and better laws. The team selected for the next year is environmental protection and sustainability. We believe climate action is urgent at the global level, considering the recently unprecedented changes in climate and associated consequences in the biosphere, society, and economy around the world. The current situation urges our attention more than ever. We are convinced that education and effective communication are the only way to increase active citizenship. A paradigm shift towards sustainability must be bottom-up by teaching the youth simple behaviors on how to take care of our world. Education, culture and science, the three UNESCO's pillars, are closely linked. Taking action in one means taking action in all of them. Remember that the future is in our hands and we have the responsibility to build a better and more sustainable society. This is the way to save the environment for the future generation. For more information, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at UNESCO Giovani. And remember, active citizens build resilient cities.
We are back with Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and more. UNESCO Giovani, what are your thoughts about the organization?
It's always good to hear motivated young leaders supporting international organizations such as UNESCO in the fields of education, science, culture, and communication to make the world a better place to live. Thumbs up.
Currently, Tom is giving lectures as part of the WireDoc Open Seminar Series initiative on water resource management and sustainable development. We already covered the first topic on water management for early to modern civilizations, so let's talk about water laws and the right to water.
You know, water law of ancient cultures is fascinating because it's not that dissimilar from how we manage water today. For example, in Wales, in the United Kingdom, the tin miners that were utilizing water to mine for tin had a system of water rights that they used so that it would eliminate some of the fighting that was going on. And then later, the Justinian Code was a basic premise for all modern water law.
Is this linked to buying and selling water rights in Colorado?
It absolutely is. You know, the human nature is all about standing in lines and taking turns. And so the idea of selling water rights goes back to the concept of first in time, first in right. For example, if you go to a concert, usually the first person that arrives there can pick their best seat.
Yeah.
Their first in time. Mm-hmm. They get the priority seating. And those that come later, their seat is not as good. Same way with water rights in Colorado.
The Water Court of Tribunal de las Aguas de Valencia takes place every Thursday at 11 a.m. to resolve farm border, irrigation, and other water-related disputes between local farmers.
And this is very similar to our water court system in Greeley, Colorado, where disputes are settled in a court of law, and it's a way to reduce conflict between water.
Moving on, our third topic is human geography and sustainable water development. Most people may not know that the Los Angeles Aqueduct allowed the city to grow, since no additional water supplies existed in the local area.
Yeah, Los Angeles is home to millions and millions of people, and the water supply in that area is only adequate to support a population of maybe 300,000.
Mm-hmm.
So by bringing water from the aqueducts in Northern California, it allowed the city to grow and expand and turn into the epicenter of culture that it is today in our country.
Water education and awareness can significantly save cities from running dry, just like it happened in Cape Town, South Africa.
Yeah, that was a terrible situation where the city was on the verge of running out of drinking water this past year because of drought, climate change, and population growth. And the city was very fortunate in that some wetter weather arrived, and through strict rationing, they've been able to avert a disaster.
Necessity is the mother of invention. Just have a look at what happened in Italy in 2017, the worst drought in Italy in over 150 years.
I was here last summer in July, and the area between Rome and Perugia reminded me of northern New Mexico in the U.S., which is very dry and a semi-arid area. It was so dry around here, and we went to the Vatican one day, and the Pope had turned off the fountains the day before, something that I don't believe ever happened before in order to conserve waters. It was a big problem.
Is it climate change?
It could be. You know, it's droughts are cyclical. We go through periods of dry weather. Climate change, the warming weather, definitely has an impact in certain parts of the world. It's hard to definitely say it's climate change, but it sure could have been part of the problem.
I remember this week we were watching the Chasing Ice movie from James Balog, and it was unbelievable how the ice retreated from one place to another so fast in the past 15 years.
Yeah, this has been pretty amazing. So this is a film about the climate change, the warming of the weather in Greenland. And my wife and I have seen the same experience in Canada, where we toured a glacier, and there were signs on the ground that showed how the glacier had melted over the past 80 years or so by many kilometers. So the idea of warming climate, which is causing glaciers to melt, is not a hoax. You can see it with our own eyes.
In today's show, Professor Tomczyk talked about the principles of water resources history, development, management, and policy.
Thanks again for the invitation, Francisco. If you're interested in water studies online certifications, environmental courses, water law, or potential collaboration, please contact me at the One World, One Water Center website at Metropolitan State University in Denver. You can also follow this show's social media platforms at WarDoc or Francisco Pena.
Tom, Rosella, myself, and all the team members of Radiofonica, we wish you a happy winter holidays. See you all next year. And remember, active citizens
build resilient cities.
Goodbye.